Welcome to episode 128 of the NRT Now podcast. I'm your host, Jake. And if you're new here or haven't been here for very long, one of the things that we do every once in a while is what we call a next big thing episode. And what this mini series is we get the opportunity to introduce you to new artists that are coming onto the scene here and share their stories and just get to introduce you to some new music. In this next big thing episode, I'm excited to introduce you to Todd Rugs. And this episode has been in the works for a little while, and we talk about this here in just a little bit. But fun story about Todd. He talks about being a part of the church where vertical worship comes from. Another person who has come from that church is a guy named Dallas Jenkins. And if you recognize that name, he is the creator and director of the TV series The Chosen. And not a week after we recorded this episode here with Todd, I got the chance to chat with Dallas for just a few minutes, and I let off with, "Hey, I just met an acquaintance of yours last week." And I, said Todd, and he's like, "Acquaintance? He's more than an acquaintance. He's a dear friend." So, Todd, good news. Your story is backed up. But no, guys, just so excited to share this episode with you here. And if you haven't already, make sure that you're subscribed, following, whatever that looks like on your favorite podcast platform. And with that, here's my conversation with Todd Rugs. We're here with Todd Rugs. Did I say that right?
Yes, Rugs, not Rukes. A lot of people say Rukes.
Well, this is a super special episode in this Next Big Thing series because you are actually sitting here in my home office. You are the first one to be in my home office in person, not just over Zoom.
I feel honored.
And so, Todd, you don't know this, but this has been a few months in the making. We're both connected with Keith Everett Smith, who is Tosh Layton's husband. He's part of the Diversity Band with Toby Mac's band, awesome producer in Nashville.
Amazing.
And I think it was April 1st. I think it was actually April Fool's Day. So I don't know if this is like leading somewhere or not. But he was on the Hitch Deep tour, and it was the last day we're running around Pittsburgh. And he's like, "Man, you've got to listen to this guy, Todd Rugs. He's got this album coming out. I'm working with him. He's going to be awesome. So you really need to hear about this." So what has that been now? This is end of September. Mm-hmm. So this episode has been, I'm not even going to do the math. This episode has just been months in the making. Yeah. So it's exciting to have you here.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
I want to hear a little bit about your story. You're a newer artist coming on the scene. You were talking that you had a single about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But you're still, kind of in the undercurrent. Just introduce yourself a little bit to the listeners here and just kind of who Todd is.
Yeah. Yeah. Kids. Yes.
So this being at my home studio here, there is the real life of kids happening here. So you have three kids. Let's start with that.
Yes. Have three little boys, ages 2, 3, and 5. And I'm from Illinois, south of Chicago. Born in Tallahassee, Florida, actually, and then grew up in Illinois. Went to school in Lynchburg, Virginia. And through high school is when I started to get into worship leading. I'd been doing music since fourth grade, playing piano, picking up guitar and things like that. But started leading worship for my high school worship band, went to Christian school, went and studied worship in college. And then at that time, I was kind of at a crossroads. I had connected with Keith about that time. We had done a single together. I was, deciding whether or not I was going to move to Nashville and, us build on that single and create an album and pursue, artistry full time, or if I was going to land at a church. I was also interviewing at some churches at the time for a worship pastor position. Ultimately, I chose the church route. Never stopped songwriting or anything like that, but the church I was at is where vertical worship was based out of. So I kind of channeled all my songwriting and musical efforts into what vertical was doing, and not as much for a while there, not as much of my solo stuff.
Gotcha. So you're part of the vertical worship band.
I was. I was for a number of years there. Yeah, I'm not at that church anymore.
So what are the songs that came out of that season? I know for a while, and I think they're still one of the main names in worship. Yeah. I know they had a couple of like really huge hits. I want to say it was like 3, 4, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Were you part of some of those songs? Were you part of writing those and bringing those out?
So I was part of a song named Set My Heart that, was pretty popular around that time. It actually got really popular around the world, like even outside of the United States. There's this if you look on YouTube, there's like this, you know, Romania, all these worship bands in Romania that were doing it. But Set My Heart, there's another song, If I Have You, I was on that one too. And a couple others, you know, interspersed in there.
So you've been married for how long with the three, and you have the three kids?
Yeah, our anniversary was this week, actually, eight years. We've been married, so celebrated here in Dallas.
Awesome. And now you're doing a podcast here on your anniversary trip.
Yep. Yeah, it was kind of I've been here for a week, so there was kind of multiple purposes why we're here. Sure. But yeah, we were like, oh yeah, next week's our anniversary too, so we should maybe do something fun while we're there in Dallas. So,
you know, here in Dallas, there's, you know, a lot of stuff between the Dallas side and the Fort Worth side. What was your anniversary celebration?
Yeah, we went out to eat. There's a place called the Boardwalk up near, I'm going to get it wrong, but I think it's up near Frisco, kind of that area. Went to a place called Union Bear and, walked around and, you know, beautiful night. It's great weather right here, you know, at this time of the year, not like a couple months ago when I was here, when I was sweating profusely. So, yeah,
it's finally, we're recording this at the end of September in 2022 and it's finally now in the 80s.
Yes.
Which my northern crew is like, it's still the 80s? What the heck?
Where I'm at in Chicago, that's, you know, that's top of the line.
Yeah. Oh, man, we've been melting this summer, and just to be able to finally have the windows open in the house, finally have that kind of fall festive season starting to come around.
Feels great.
It's kind of a long time coming. That is one of the things that I miss being here in Texas, is having more of those seasons, because we have like our first summer, we have our real summer, and then we can have like the second summer.
Yeah. See, winter, Chicago, you know, we get snow and then chilly and then a little bit of it's kind of hot. And then that cycle all over again.
So part of the trip down here you're talking about is staffing. Part of your story, part of your journey here is talking about with staffing.
Yeah.
Are you talking like church staffing, worship staffing? What does that look like?
Yeah, church staffing and worship staffing. I, in some ways, I'm a bit of a schizophrenic. So I was a worship pastor turned HR director turned staff recruiter. All through it, I've been leading worship and writing songs and things like that. But I have, you know, a company called Rook Search Group, and we work with churches from all around. And that's probably why I'm down here this week meeting with a bunch of churches. But we do a lot of worship and music kind of roles with that. So I get the privilege of, you know, meeting all kinds of churches.
So when you're looking at that, do you have people that come to you? Like, what's that process of either a church looking for like a worship pastor, or what is that, or as a worship leader looking to be planted in a church, what does that process look like?
Yeah, so on the church side, you know, a church will get to a point where they're not able to generate the kind of candidates that they want to on their own. Especially right now, we're in a, you know, a candidates market, and it's just harder for churches to find, you know, great candidates on their own. So they'll look outside of themselves to a firm like ours and a group of people or a company that's, you know, really connected and does this full time. Because that's the thing, is the church has to run the day-to-day ministry operations, right? They don't have hours and hours to be vetting and making calls and things like that. So they'll usually come to us, inquire with us, and we'll introduce ourselves and tell them what we're about and what we do and how our process works. And, you know, then we'll engage in a search. And, you know, we have a four-phased approach to it, and, you know, really evaluate all the way through execution. And that's kind of what it looks like on the church side. We really just take all that tedious work, you know, from the church, and by using our networks and our connections, able to generate some great candidates for them.
So if I'm a worship leader that wants to get involved in like a full-time ministry, I want to get in that land and make that my vocation, what does that process look like from that side?
Yeah, so you go to our website or talk to, you know, a member of our team. There's a place where you can, you know, first step is submitting your resume and some answering some general questions and things like that. And then we'll, you know, set up a time to connect with those, you know, candidates and get to know them a little bit, hear about what they're looking for. And then, you know, it's completely free for a candidate. So if a candidate's out there looking for a worship job, you know, I would suggest put your resume everywhere and anywhere. But by putting it with us and then going through a bit of screening with us, we're able to really align, you know, what that person is looking for, but also what they're most gifted for, and align them with churches that we're working with.
So if I'm, you know, someone either a career change or something like that, I mean, I guess what's the biggest thing going into a worship leading career that is kind of unexpected? I mean, because we have churches all over the country. Yeah. And we have, I don't even want to know how many volunteers across the country that are doing this. You know, as you're stepping into that and looking at that, or, you know, whether it's college kids coming in or whatever that is, what are some of the things that you want to be aware of that, you know, ahead of time, that what does that all look like from that?
Yeah. Side? So obviously, theological, if I understand the question, you know, theological and philosophical fit in alignment with the church is important. You know, you want to be starting from a place where you actually agree with the senior pastor on, you know, what is worship, what's our philosophy behind what songs we choose, and, you know, all of that, or else you're just going to enter into a situation where, you know, you're going to end up in worship wars, right? Okay. You know, some churches that, you know, might say they want to be a certain way, or, you know, progress in a certain way stylistically and so forth. And then, you know, a candidate will get in there to do that and then find out that the church doesn't really want to do that. You know, there's things like that that we really try to make really clear for both parties involved in that. That'd be one thing. I mean, I always preach, you know, the relationship between the senior pastor and the worship pastor are crucial, you know, for the worship ministry of the church. You know, when I was up in Chicago and with Vertical, people would ask us all the time, you know, what's your secret sauce? You know, how do you guys have, you know, this special thing, you know? And we always used to tell them it's the relationship between the worship leaders and the senior pastor. And we always had this saying where we don't lead worship so that you'll become better hearers of the message after worship. Our senior pastor was preaching so that the congregation and members would become better worshipers, so that when they show up that week later, they enter the room leaning in more, engaging more. And so, you know, we kind of flip that on its head. But all that to say, I think the relationship between that senior pastor and the worship pastor is crucial.
Well, and the money, right? I mean, because, you know, you go in to a worship leading career for the money.
Not so much. Yeah.
I mean, and I only say that because, I mean, there's a lot of awesome stuff that happens with a worship leader, but, you know, just kind of that perspective of this really is more of a ministry.
Yeah.
And from the worship leaders that I know, the worship pastors that I know, like, you can make a decent living at it. It's not like, I assume that you should find a church that you're not living in poverty just to do this.
Right.
But, you know, it's not the, like, lustrous, you know, driving a Lexus, driving a, you know, having the big house kind of a career. It's a ministry.
Yeah, you're not... you know, you're not going to be living in the hills, you know, being a worship pastor. But you know, on the flip side, you know, 30 years ago, even 20 years ago, in a lot of respects, a full-time worship pastor that you could do that for a living was, you know, a bit unheard of. And so, you know, you can still provide for your family. And, you know, there's some really great worship opportunities out there.
This isn't, you know, 100% the direction that we were looking at, you know, when this started, you know, thing of the podcast, you know, like, we take all sorts of twists and turns here, but, you know, I just love hearing about that because, like you said, it is a relatively new situation for a lot of churches is to have, you know, creative director, creative pastor, you know, worship leader, those kind of roles. There's a picture in a lot of people's mind of how glorious it is, you know, how awesome that would be. But at the same point, you know, there's also the, well, I'm working for a church, so I'm going to live in poverty, you know, that kind of stuff. Like, there's, I think, a lot of misconceptions on both sides of how that runs, you know, as like either going to a career change or, like I said, the youngins coming up.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of different opinions. There's a lot of uncertainties with that
process. Yeah. Because of the nature of the upfront nature of a worship position, right? That you're on stage, you might have lights and, you know, your church. There's a perception of the glamour in that, right? But that's for 2 hours a week, right? You know, there's a lot more to that, and a lot of things when you're that go into creating an effective worship ministry that are hard, you know. And even raising up volunteers and finding volunteers and the sacrifice in pay where you might be able to get paid more, you know, going to the marketplace, you know, there's all kinds of factors. Yeah. To your point.
Cause you know, managing volunteers is like, that's the glamour spot of the job.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what exactly. I really feel that the ministry part of that is not only are you leading worship on Sunday morning, but you're also leading people all through the week.
That's right.
You're walking with people in their hurt, their pain,
right.
You know, what's happening in real life. You know, of course, you know, dealing with creatives is always, you know, a little, it takes a special gift. Let's put it that way sometimes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm a creative and I know that dealing with me sometimes is, requires a gift.
A lot of people management and, you know, a lot of the times creatives tend to be more introverted, right? It kind of goes hand in hand with their strengths. Well, you know, when you're pastoring a group of people, you have to be, you know, somewhat of an extrovert too. So that's really draining on a worship pastor, you know, that side of the job, you know, who, you know, might not naturally, you know, just walk into a room and be the life of the party all the time. And, you know, but to really get real with people and help them through the problems they're going through. It's a lot more than just strumming a guitar.
And I think digging into that, like ministering on to people kind of side, I think that's really what is the outflow or the, I think a healthy Sunday morning worship is outflow of a healthy and cared for and pastored worship team. Because I know we've had some members on our team that have gone through super hard periods of their life and have gotten up and worshiped on Sunday morning. You know, it's not taking a break. Like, the people who have gone through that walked into church because this is where I need to be. This, I need to be worshiping. I need to be a part of this.
That's right.
And I think that that's really where the power of a good worship service is that, like I said, that crew, the volunteer crew, the worship team is really pastored, mentored, and walking closer in their walk with God. And that pours out into the crowd on Sunday mornings.
Yeah, that's right. And worshiping through the good times and bad times, and the worship pastor has to model that. You know, that person can't just put on a good face and a smile, you know, all the time. The person has to be vulnerable and lead the way in that. And some of the sweetest times on a weekend are when, you know, the leader and the team is leading out of a place of vulnerability and authenticity.
Looking more towards your album that just came out, and if I remember correctly, this is your debut album. You had the single a while ago. This is the single, or the debut Todd Rooks album.
Yeah, that's right.
So we talked a little bit about Keith. Talk about that process of producing, working with Keith.
Yeah.
And just the whole production process. There's a guy here in Dallas that you met with, I saw earlier, that did the mixing for the album. Yeah. So you've had all these people that have kind of poured into this project. What does that look like? What's been kind of the process into this project here?
Yeah, it's been a really fun process. So I reached out to Keith, I don't know, a couple years ago now is when we kind of first engaged about this. And I told him, I want to do a full length, you know, would you be interested? You know, at the time he's on the road with Toby Mac and, you know, Tasha Layton is his wife and, you know, all these things he's working on. And so, you know, I send a message, you know, across the bow, thinking there's a 5% chance that he'd be like, oh yeah, I'll do it in my busy life. I think he texted me back or messaged me back within 5 minutes and said, all caps, I would love to. Like, oh my goodness, okay, let's do it. So
no turning back now.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'd started writing a lot of songs during that time too. So, you know, we were kicking stuff back and forth, and ultimately when we kind of landed on the songs we wanted to go after, you know, it was a bit of editing, you know, kind of a whole editing process with that, you know, changed some lyrics, changed some, you know, choruses and music and things. And, you know, that led into the, you know, pre-production. And, you know, ultimately I made, I don't know, 4 or 5 trips from Chicago to Nashville during that time when we actually started recording. And, you know, he got the band together, some amazing musicians, talented musicians in Nashville, that I've worked with, a whole bunch of people, you know. And, I flew in and started the recording process with them. And how we did it is, you know, we had the whole band in and recorded it all at once. And, you know, I know this is, Keith really enjoys doing, recording it that way rather than just having a, you know, drummer come in and do his part, bass come in and do his part, you know, whatever. So that was really sweet, because you know you can feel the rest of the band, you know, when you're all together. And we had some really sweet moments in the studio because of that, because we were all in there at the same time, and just watching Keith work his magic is that guy is just so talented. So that, you know, we did the recording of it and then ultimately cut my vocals. One of the reasons why I wanted to go with Keith is because my experience with him just in recording vocals is amazing. He has this ability to, you know, draw out the best of you, and while also being really honest if something sucks. So I appreciate that, you know, and I just think we really work well together in that regard. And
sometimes it's good to just be told that you suck.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't grow unless you get told that.
That's right.
In the right manner most of the time.
But. Yeah. There's a way to communicate it. But yeah, I think it's, you know, the most loving thing you can do is tell the truth to somebody.
Yeah. You know, there's that verse, you know, as iron sharpens iron, and you know, that doesn't happen without contact.
That's right. Yeah, and sometimes sparks fly when iron sharpens iron.
Yeah. I think that's one thing that, you know, it's missing a lot too, is like we just don't tell the truth to people. You know, we're like, like I don't want to hurt their feelings.
And
sometimes the truth just kind of needs to be told in a loving way. You know, Jesus told the truth a lot, you know, in a loving way. But so I think that's something that we're kind of scared of right now, just kind of a, you know, society as a whole, is, you know, kind of people, almost as a church as well, like we just don't want to like step on people's toes and really tell that truth.
I think you're right. I think it's a broader, not to jump into the political realm here, but I think there's a broader cultural trend, you know, during this time that I think has permeated into the church too, that there's just a more heightened level of sensitivity and less tolerance to potentially be offended, right?
Yeah. That's really what fosters the growth. I mean, if you don't know, then you don't know and you can't work on that. I mean, we can apply that to marriage tips. We can, you know, apply that to the creative side,
right?
You know, just, you know, life in general. Like, you know, unless we have that truth, unless we're helping each other and pushing each other and being like, hey, man, that needs a little work.
Yeah.
You know, we just don't, we can't grow. We really can't push forward without that. And I think, like, I love that you have Keith to push you on that one. Like,
yeah.
And I think, especially as guys, we just really don't have the friends that do that a lot. Yeah. We don't have a lot of friends that we really are open with that can really push us to be like, hey, bro, like, come on. Like, that's dumb.
Right. Yeah. Stop being an idiot.
Yeah. Don't be dumb. Like, that's my main mode of encouragement. I'm not sure if that's good or not. Hey, man, don't be dumb. Yeah. Just don't be stupid.
Yeah.
Really, really Christian faith-like encouragement right there.
Exactly.
So talking about some of the songs off the album, what's some of the life that's gone into these? Like, Diamond is a song that really resonated with me. I think there's a good story in that one, if I'm picking up a little bit from the lyrics.
Yeah. Well, it's simple. I'm dumb and my wife is awesome. That's one of, there's a couple love songs on the album that I wrote for my wife, and that's one of them. You know, we just hit 8 years of marriage, and, you know, that song really just came out of just the overwhelming gratitude I have, you know, that the Lord would bring me her. Yeah. You know, I wake up every week, I was like, are you sure you wanted to do this?
I'm with you there a lot of the time. It's like, are you sure you love me? Are you still?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I resonated with that lyric really well. Like, I'm a dime a dozen, but you're a diamond in the rough.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So I had that phrase in my head, you know, for a while of like, you know, you could have picked anybody. I'm a dime a dozen. Yeah. Then I started kind of playing around with the, you know, alliteration of dime a dozen, diamond, you know, and that's where, you know, I just went to my piano and, you know, just started writing it. But the whole album, you know, was really birthed out of really a hard time after the church I was at in Chicago kind of imploded. You know, the founding pastor, you know, was let go. I made national news, you know, it was in the headlines, it was in the blogs, it was all of that. You know, a lot of the songs, you know, you could tie that thread back to the experiences I had and the things that I learned during that time. But it was a tough time, and seeing the, you know, just my wife stand by me during that time. Talk about that song, Diamond. you know, there's a lot of that. That was the reason why I wanted to write that song too.
Can you talk a little bit more about some of the other songs and some of the life that's gone into some of the other songs?
Yeah. So the whole album's called Square One. And I think if you were to put a banner theme over all the songs, it's that. But just talking about that song specifically, you know, was written in a time where I really felt like I was in the middle of a battle. Like, yeah, I just kept having this imagery of I'm literally on a battlefield with, you know, people with guns on both sides and bullets are flying and you're ducking and dodging. Really, that was representative of Christianity, you know. And when you zoom out, I feel like in a lot of ways in Christendom, we've gotten to a place where we eat our own. Like, I don't know how many times I've told myself over the last few years, if I was an unbeliever looking into this, why would I ever want to touch it with a 10-foot pole?
And I think cancel culture started in the church sometimes. I kind of wonder about that sometimes. Like, did it start here?
Yeah, yeah. If it didn't, it certainly has been impacted by, you know, the outside culture. So, you know, that's where Square One came, where, you know, there's just all this noise and bickering and arguing and, you know, all this drama, and just getting back to square one, getting back to the basics of our faith, which is to love God and love people. That's really where Square One was birthed. You know, there is, I love the lyrics to the bridge of that one. If I don't have love, I don't know you like I say I do. And, you know, square one, what is getting back to square one? It's love. Yeah. And modeling Jesus. You know, what greater love than this, that a man would lay down his life for another person? And, you know, are we doing that as the church? Are we doing that as, you know, believers and brothers and sisters? That's where, you know, square one came out of. Yeah. And then there's some, you know, I think of a Love a Little More that's on the album, I would say is kind of a cousin to that, you know, just thematically of, you know, through it all, just my personal journey, I've come out on the other side. You know, just learning to love people more. It sounds so basic, but
it's been tough the last couple of years, yeah, especially.
Yeah, but I think everyone's been. I mean, you know, even with if your church didn't go through an implosion, you've certainly been affected by COVID. You certainly have seen everything happening, maybe in other, you know, other parts of Christendom and things like that. And that's my prayer, is just, you know, as we're all kind of experiencing this together as a church, that we would all kind of come out on the other side. Just knowing how to love a little bit better, having eyes a little bit more aligned with how Jesus, you know, sees us, and how do we relate to each other, and the grace we show each other, and, you know, back to the truth thing. Yes, we want truth, but how are we delivering the truth? You know, like you mentioned, cancel culture. There's a better way, you know, and I think it's all going to start by each of us loving our neighbor better, starting with loving God. We have to love God first, but then loving those around us. So that's where, you know, Love a Little More on the album, that's where that came from. And so those are, you know, those are a couple of the songs.
I love those lyrics, you know, and I love that. And that's been kind of my theme over the last couple of years, because I really think that, especially the last couple of years, I mean, I've been through church fights. I've been through, you know, a lot of that kind of stuff. So it's not like some of this is new, but you know, it's kind of like a paper cut, right? And then you get lemon juice on it or salt or something like that. And you're like, holy crap, that hurts. Like, that is here. This paper cut's here. And, you know, I think everything that we've walked through, I mean, it's been, I don't think there's been anybody that hasn't been touched by everything that's gone through.
Yeah.
And I think that's just that salt and put that in there. And it's like, as a whole, you know, as a culture, as a church and all that, I think it's causing us to turn and look inward. And I'm like, we may have a little bit more work to do on this. And, you know, I like what you say. It's like, it's starting with loving God for, you know, drawing near, because I can't do it on my own, because, you know, my opinions, my humanness of it says you're an idiot, you know, like back to that encouragement, right? Yeah. Don't be an idiot. You're an idiot. You know, like this works well, but you know, it's like, you know, the human side of me wants to say you're an idiot. You're all this, but it has to be God first. And that love that's unnatural has to come from God first before we can really start loving other people around us, whether we disagree with them or whatever that looks like.
Yeah.
You know, we can't do it on our own.
That's right. Yeah. It's got to be plugged into a source, and the source can't be ourselves, or else love has a limit, you know?
So on this album, what was the song that hit you the hardest? What was the song that was kind of that had the biggest oomph to write, record, and yeah, and now that's out here, that you're just like, man, I did that, or man, I can't believe I did that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would probably put Square One. That's probably the first one that comes to mind. You know, there's a message in there that's a bit of a punch to us all. Like, in the music, you know, kind of followed that. The lyrics to the second verse are, I look around, what even are we fighting for? All I see is battle lines, and we don't know which side we're on. You know, that's a message for us as Christians. So, you know, when all that came together, there was the lyrics that meant a lot to me, but then there was the music side that really aligned with what the words were saying, just in the punchiness of the music. Yeah, I think that one is probably one of my favorites. And I mentioned Love a little more. That one is one that means a lot to me. That one's a little bit more delicate in its presentation. And, you know, we had a string section on that one too. And there's a duet version with a gal, actually one of the other gals that was in Vertical Worship, who sang on that one. But those two probably, and I know I just talked about those two, but those two probably mean the most to me on the album.
Well, as we start winding down the episode here, being a dad of three, and of three boys especially, there's got to be a good dad joke in here somewhere. I know there's going to be eye rolls. Like, there's going to be a lot of like, no, please don't. But I think both being dads, we have to end with a good dad joke.
Oh, okay. Okay, hold on. Let me think. A dad joke. I say them all the time. And of course, when I'm put on the spot, you can't remember it, right?
Yeah, no. Because it's setting, right? Like, we're not supposed to do this in civilized company.
Yeah. Okay. I made up a joke with my oldest son. The joke is, what did the snowman eat for breakfast? Snowmeal. So I don't know if that counts as a dad joke, but that's one we literally made up together.
100% dad. And that sound that you just heard was everybody just groaning.
Like, yeah, perfect, exactly.
Perfect, spot on.
Exactly.
Awesome, Todd. Well, we just appreciate you hanging out with us here and being the initial guest in Studio Frederick.
Yes, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.